talk with George Norrie, call the Wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
And your phone calls with our guest, Dr. Bruce Lipton. We'll be back with him in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our special guest tonight, Dr. Bruce Lipton, and your phone calls tonight as they begin to roll in, Bruce. Do you travel much, speak?
A lot. Most two, three, four times a month out every weekend.
That's a lot.
Yeah, but it's really great because it's just fun to see people understand really a little bit more who they really are and how much power they have in controlling the unfoldment of their lives.
Do you believe in faith healers?
Yes.
You do?
Yes. This is part of the energy, this field of identity that runs through us, and it's an information field, sort of like I'm sure people in your audience are familiar with Rupert Sheldrake's morphogenic fields. It's pretty much the same kind of thing, that we can influence each other, not in our physical bodies, but in our energy forms.
Let's go to the phones. Ready?
Yeah.
Let's pick it up by going east of the Rockies. First of all, you're on with Dr. Bruce Lipton. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, where are you calling from?
Roswell, Georgia. This is Kathy.
Had you said Roswell, New Mexico,
we
would have put you on our shoulders and carried you around.
Well, I wanted to ask the doctor a couple of things. He talked about healing ourselves and healing the planet, and if he could give us any advice that we could maybe start now working with on healing ourselves, and also get his opinion on GMOs, genetically modified foods, those were a couple of questions.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay,
chat,
well, thanks, Kathy. Let me start with the GMOs, because that's a nice quicker one. Okay.
Okay.
The GMOs, very interesting. What we found out in the new research in biology is that genes are not contained with any one species, that this whole new understanding is manifesting that organisms are continuously exchanging DNA with each other. So when we put out a genetically modified organism into an environment, we're actually seeding that modification throughout the field. In fact, it's reversed a couple of potential goals that they were looking for, in that some of the weeds have picked up the modified genes are now stronger than the crops that they were trying to protect in the first place. So that's reversed. And here's one and it's mentioned in the book, because this is, again, an important topic, is that it is now recognized, we have bacteria in our gut, mm-hmm, that are essential for our digestion. It is now recognized that these bacteria have picked up genes from genetically modified foods. And so we're changing our own interior flora and fauna through these genetic products.
So, is that good?
It's not a good idea. I think I relate to it in the book. It's sort of like Sorcerer's Apprentice, where Mickey Mouse was trying to learn the magic and had a little bit of knowledge and got all those brooms that carry buckets of water to fill up a big cistern, and then it got out of control. I think genetic engineers at this point, because they really don't have an understanding how cells work, they're not using the leading edge information, relying on old stuff, are much like Mickey Mouse playing with our genes, and I surely don't want them to do this, and yet it's money that drives it and not science.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I think, is a problem that's awaiting us that has grave potential consequences unless we get some more awareness into the field. Now, the awareness part, that also relates now to your first question. What do we do? And as I said, we're not genetically determined. That we're actually, that the physiology of the cell is controlled by our perceptions of the world. And then I said, but there are two minds that are operating here, the conscious one, which is really like the spirit involving with our experiences, a spirit like putting the hands on the wheel and using our life experiences to learn how to drive the car. So there's some sense of when we're really dealing in consciousness, we're driving the vehicle ourselves. Yet 85% of our functions and activities are essentially carried out by the subconscious mind. And the significance about that is we don't observe that when it's happening. And that subconscious mind is not even programmed by us. It's actually programmed by the people who taught us our early life experiences from before birth through the first 6 years. The conflicts that arise in our lives are our consciousness may be looking for health, happiness, love, prosperity. But our subconscious, which is programmed by somebody else and operating our system most of the time, might have been programmed with the kinds of things you hear parents yelling at kids in a supermarket, like, you stupid kid, or you don't deserve things. Well, what the book goes into, a very important emphasis, and you can also download an article about this, a free article on the web about conscious parenting, is that when we talk to a child less than 6 years of age, the brain is designed, it's the child's brain is not functioning in the EEG range of active consciousness. It's actually in lower activity, which is called the hypnagogic state. Mm-hmm. And the reason why this is important is a child has to learn all the rules to fit into society, doesn't have enough conscious experience to contribute to those rules. And so the brain EEG activity doesn't even express consciousness till as a predominant form until after six. Which means the first 6 years of a child's life, they're essentially in a hypnotic trance. And when a child is told, by a harried parent, like, you are stupid, or you don't deserve something, you see that at the store when a kid wants something and they start screaming and the parent says, you don't deserve it. We have to recognize a child at that level doesn't have the consciousness to figure out that the mother is saying that because she's in a hurry and things are late and all this kind of stuff. The child's just downloading, I don't deserve things. Well, when now you're 20, 30, 40 years of age, 85% of your behavior, when you're not looking at it, is conforming to the belief that you don't deserve things if that's what you were told. And as a result, then you will sabotage yourself without even seeing it. And I need to just add this point so people get it. It's really important, especially those that drive a car know this. When you first learned how to drive a car, it was conscious. You had to use a lot of consciousness to engage everything to make the car go.
Too much consciousness, please.
But now that you know how to drive a car when you're older, you don't even think about it. You could actually, and think about this, most of us that drive, you can either get caught up in a conversation with a passenger or be dreaming about something or, planning things in your head, that all of a sudden you look out the window and you realize you haven't actually paid attention to the road for the last 10 minutes. And the point that I'm trying to bring up, the educational point in that is, when you didn't observe yourself driving the car, who was driving the car? And the answer was your subconscious, because your conscious was engaged in conversation or planning stuff. But the more important question is this. Did you see how you drove the car during that time period? And the answer is no, because your consciousness was engaged. Well, that's the catchy point of the subconscious. It, when it works, we don't observe it, because its design is to work when we're not paying attention, to do it automatically. So the point is, if much of our programming from that 0 to 6 is putting limitations in our lives because parents say, oh, you're not good at math, or you're not smart enough, or you can't play music, when they make these pronouncements and we get that, that's in our subconscious, now we're older and we're trying to become successful, and yet 85% of our behavior, and it's behavior we don't even observe, is coming from these tapes. And why that's important is if you can catch the tapes, if you can catch the thoughts that go through your head while you're parked at the stoplight and you hear them, psychologists tell us 70% or more of those thoughts are negative and redundant. And the significance is the more negative and the more times you repeat them, the more, when you're not paying attention, that is the behavior you're expressing, meaning we're not being limited by the environment and the universe. The universe will give you anything. The fight that we have is between the conscious mind, which has a desire to become successful, and a subconscious mind that was programmed by other people.
Thanks for your call, Kathy. How do you explain then, Bruce, evil? Cells gone bad?
No, programs that are gone bad. I mean, that's why the issue, it's like evil, especially, we look at everything genetic, so they're trying to find out where's the gene for criminality and the gene for all these things, or, what makes a psychopath killer, what gene?
Yeah, I mean, Hitler didn't start off bad as a little boy, I don't think.
I think that there were lots of reports of problems, of family problems when he was growing up.
Family problems.
Profound. Yes. And remember, I said, when you're a youngster, you're just downloading the beliefs. That's why kids grow up to be almost like their parents, and a lot of people, when they're told, oh, you're just like your mom or your dad, and they take almost like an offense, like, what do you mean? Because they can't even see that automatic behavior when it plays, that it's playing a tape of their parents. So we have to really look into what happened in our development before we gain consciousness.
Well, yeah, but I've seen some parents at the trials of their serial killer son, for example.
Yeah.
Shaking their head, going, "I don't know what happened. What even are they liars? Are they in denial?"
No, they're seeing life through the way they perceive life, and it's things that happen in front of our noses. Sometimes we don't see them, and there are many stories about this, like the one that was even recently in What the Bleep, the movie, which it happened. Apparently, it was both Columbus and Magellan when their tall ships came into the harbors in the New World. And they took the small boats out and landed on the shore and met the natives. And they said, "Where'd you come from?" And they said, "That those ships out there in the harbor." And the natives looked out in the harbor and didn't see the ships. And the reason is, it was not in their reality. And I think this is the issue again about UFOs. People may see them quite frequently, but it's not in their reality, and therefore it's like totally dismissed. It's not even there. So those natives couldn't see the ship, but when they took the shaman out and a couple of them on the small boat, put them on the big boat, and they touched that boat and felt it and it became real, then after that, all the people could see the boats. So the issue is that parents see what they're going to look at, what they're looking at, and miss everything else.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi.
Good evening.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I'm George, Dr. Bruce.
Hi, George.
This is definitely a top 10 show.
Well, appreciate it. It's great stuff, great information.
Well, that's because of you, Bruce.
Oh, no, that's because the universe provided it.
If I could just say, Bruce, I came up with a saying that I'm very proud of. It's what we do is practice for what we're going to do. I wanted to suggest this, George, if I may.
Yes, please.
This field that coalesces cells into more complex structures. Could this be the energy causing the crop patterns, some of which have been described as fractal geometry, and maybe we could be just talking to ourselves?
Now, you know crop circles, Bruce, don't you?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay. Is there any correlation here?
Well, I mean, these are the wild cards, and the problem that I think we're finding is, there probably could be very much correlated information, but we deal in a world which is where they divide things, as you were well aware, into what they call the scientific group and the questionable group. And they'll put all their money into the scientific group, and when it comes to the questionable group, they just ignore it and pay no heedance to it or tell people they're crazy. And yet, when there's a change in our leadership, things that were formerly put off as not being real start to get new attention because that's what the population wants. I think that we are in this stage right now where conventional science is actually, as I said, is put us against the wall. It's not, health isn't any better with all the stuff we know. That people are moving away from that. And as mentioned in the book as well, I think we're moving into this bigger domain of consciousness, spirit, community, wholeness. And I think then all those little pieces of a picture that look separate right now, such as the crop circles, et cetera, may all come to play in a one giant picture, except our tax dollars, our science money is investing in the pharmaceutical vision of life.
Well, you and Leonard Horowitz would become the best of friends. You know that?
Well, I'm not sure of Horowitz's information, but it sounds like he's talking the same thing, right?
Yeah, he is. Pretty close. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's move on to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, this is Mike from Topanga, California.
Hi, Mike, not too far from us. Go ahead.
Wonderful to be on the show. built many a radio-controlled helicopter while listening late at night.
Yeah, and it'd be, by the way, Feb 21 on KFI will be on starting live at 10 o'clock.
Well, it's about time. They really made a terrible mistake in the past by not continuing the same programming times, I believe. What I wanted to call about was what you began to speak about at the beginning of this segment was the relationship to Rupert Sheldrake's morphogenetic field theory.
Yes.
And as I thought about it more, I realized how much of a threat this is to the status quo. And I read that a book reviewer in Nature magazine suggested that Sheldrake's books be burned.
And that means he's touching on some sensitive areas. Otherwise, they ignore him completely.
Yes. So I think this is coming into kind of a scientifically sanctioned positive mental attitude, whereas our tendency of thinking has that effect on us of whether we want to heal or whether we want to experience illness or what have you. It really just seems that it's time that science does take a closer look at this and actually start to come up with more and more theories and practices to apply it for people.
Well, this is exactly what I was talking about. Is people's attitudes change, the money follows the people. And that's why the medical industry is a little concerned, because of alternative practices have taken about half their business. And so at first they said, those are all quacks and don't pay attention to them. But of course, a lot of people got well and a lot of people get better through this. So now they've changed tack, and now they're sort of like saying, well, we're trying to bring these into our hospital. And again, why? Because if the money was going out there, even though they thought it was all quack stuff, now that so much money is out there, now they're going to take a look at it as being more serious, because they're going to follow the money on it.
Absolutely. Bruce, as more and more scientists begin to become, I think, on board, and that,
yes,
that is happening, isn't it?
It's fun, because for years I started public lectures on this about 1985, and for years I never saw a medical person come into my audience. And in the last about 2 or 3 years, there have been increasing number of doctors showing up, because they find the frustration they're hitting themselves is forcing them to think outside of the box, because as long as they stay in the box, they're not only limited, but they're actually, it's a lethal situation in regard to treating patients. So there's a change coming. And another interesting thing is that in science, they say they measure progress by tombstones. And in that regard, it's interesting, within this last number of months, three of the of major figures that gave us the genetic determinism story have died. Including Francis Crick, a guy, McCarty, who was in 1945, with two others, found out for sure that DNA was the genetic material, and then just the other day, the evolutionist Ernst Mayr, who really brought together molecular biology and Darwin to make what's called neoevolution. All three of these guys just died. What that means is, boy, we're really ready now to go past the limitations that we've held in regard to our belief concerning genes.
Stay with us. We're going to be back with more phone calls for our very special guest tonight, Dr. Bruce Lipton. If you ever need to contact me, just email me at george@coasttocoastam.com. Dr. Lipton's website, which, as he said, you can get his book much quicker this way, Bruce Lipton, LIPTON, BruceLipton.com. By the way, for those of you who like breaking stories, here's another one for you. Prince Charles plans to marry Camilla Parker Bowles. There you go. Back in a moment.
Want to time travel? Go back to past shows on Streamlink. Sign up online at coasttocoastam.com.
wrapped around each other, trying so hard to stay warm. That first cold winter together, lying in each other's arms, watching those old moonbeams falling in love so desperately. Honey, I was your hero, and you were my leading lady. We had it all, just like Bogey and Bacall, starring in our own late, late show, sailing away to Key Largo.
To talk with George Norrie, call the wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
I love that song, don't you? Our guest tomorrow on Coast to Coast, Jay-Z Knight. She will share her story and experiences connected with the channeling of a 35-year-old warrior from the lost continent of Atlantis. A scientific test shows that she's telling the truth. So we're going to talk with her about that. I can't wait for that. This is a first for me, too. After Dark, it's a CD. You get two of them. They're different, of course. 2.5 hours of great bumper music, calls to the show, and ghost stories. Couple ways to order it. AfterDarkCD.com. That's their website, AfterDarkCD.com. Or call this toll-free number. Operators are there, or you'll go straight to voicemail and get taken care of as soon as possible. 1-800-598-598. 2331. That's 1-800-598-2331. And let's go right to the phones, Bruce. Dr. Bruce Lipton, our guest, and right at the end, he'll tell you about that special downloadable offer he's got. West of the Rockies, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Good morning, Dr. Bruce. Good morning,
Good
George.
Morning.
Hi.
There's always these, you guys get so close, the scientists get so close, everybody gets so close to these answers that everybody wants to know. But there's no way that you're ever going to get those answers in the human form. You'll have to be in your spirit form or your soul form in order to get those answers, because those answers could be turned around and used on us in a negative energy way. And the only way that that could keep clean and to keep pure as it is not to let someone in that could damage it. So the only way that you're ever going to get the answers that we're looking for is everybody has to take time out to take care of one another and think of somebody else before yourself. And we'll have all the answers you've ever wanted, because there will be no more questions.
What do you think of that, Bruce?
Well, that was just the kind of thing I was talking about. What you said is the nature of community. And that's what evolution was all about. And that's the failing point that we experience in our world today, especially here in the States, is the loss of community, which really was characteristic of the States, 50 years ago, where you could feel that you knew people and you could feel safe in a community. And now that's even broken down, that we don't even have community within family anymore. That's a de-evolution in a sense. And you're right that we really have to come back together to respect one another, know who we are in the process, and also recognize that the other people are just extensions of who we are as well.
Next up. Oh, go ahead, Bruce.
I just want to say that was I agree with you. We have to become conscious. And that's using our spiritual drive and not just depending on the mechanism.
East of the Rockies, you're up with Bruce Lipton. Hi there.
Hi, this is Jessica from New York, and I love your show.
Thanks, Jessica.
And I have four things that I'd like to raise that I'd like the doctor to comment on. One is this issue of complexification. Things seem to get more and more complex as time passes. The second issue is this raises the concept of the arrow of time, which also then goes to the concept of progress. Then this ties into the Teilhard de Chardin thing of complexification and nuogenesis, and you have people evolving and supposedly getting more conscious, but what is this force that pushes it? It's almost as though there's some, it's not even a creator force, but it's some sort of force that seems to push us toward a more complex and conscious thing. And you know, all the things that you've been talking about and the callers have been talking about, kind of, what is there something that you can discuss in the work you've been doing that, whether it's dark matter or Sheldrake's field, what do you think this is and what do you think all those different issues relate to it as?
Well, that's a lot of questions, and my expertise being more at the cellular level, I see your issue about complexity, but complexity at one level is not necessarily complexity, but more awareness. And complexity makes it sound like things get harder to understand, and yet life is so fundamentally simple, and that's been our big problem because we do look at it as being complex, and nature operates off of the most fundamental simplistic rules. And when it comes to direction and push, that's where I think the mathematicians that are involved with fractal geometry will be able to translate for us what's going on, because we live in a chaos zone, and that chaos zone is like an event horizon. It's the surface of the Earth and the interface with the energy, especially from the sun. And life is formed right at that interface where the energy of the sun meets the Earth. That is a chaotic pattern that you can mathematically figure with fractals. And when you start to see what fractals are, they're a continuous iterated equation repeated over and over again. It drives itself. There's no end to it. It's infinity. It just goes on and on. So if you look at the patterns that we're in, and again, this is what George and I were talking about earlier about, they're like fields out there that shape this matter.
Right.
That we are becoming material in a swirling eddy of this chaos at the surface of our planet, and we're being driven by a geometry, which is that's where, if we're going to get answers from, is between those mathematicians and the physicists that see how the shaping of that field leads to the shaping of who we are. Yet the one thing, as you mentioned, it gets more complexity, larger and larger communities. Communities, more and more awareness, the cell having a unit of awareness, 50 trillion cells in your body having the next higher level of awareness, which is that human level, then 50 trillion cells in my body and how many other millions and millions of other people then form that next level. And yet every level is basically a simple repetitive pattern of the same thing. And yet we're being driven to recognize that we live in an entire ecosystem, that we were not just deposited here and can terrorize it, because when we understand the flow of the system, we will advance our own evolution. And what is that? The only thing that we can find uniform about evolution is that over time it leads to increased awareness. And so there's a built-in, it's almost like Star Trek, you know, one of the Veger. We're out there accumulating all this awareness to feed back on itself. And so there's a plan of continuing awareness whatever way we get there. And the next way, and we're on the verge of coming out of a chaos right now to another form, that civilization is actually in a fractal image repeating an evolution that's already happened, that the evolution of animals and the evolution of human civilization as an animal have important parallels. And today, we're right at a transition point between a reptilian civilization and a mammalian civilization. And
what do you mean by that exactly? Reptilian versus mammalian.
Okay, that the character of a reptile is conscious but not self-conscious.
Mm-hmm.
And the character of a mammal is consciousness, self-consciousness, which leads to nurturing. Reptiles just do what they need to do at the moment, at the time, with no consideration about where and why and what they're doing. Mammals do everything with a vision of what that will do in the future. And so we are under a leadership right now, which is more or less just doing what things to be next that has to be done, without looking down the road to see where we're going. Mammals are nurturers. These are the people that were really started to coalesce in 1969 when the evolution of our bird phase, which goes reptiles, birds, mammals, bird phase, it started with Wilbur and Orville Wright, took us to the moon. And that evolution led us to the moon. And when they shot that picture of the Earth from the moon, it put into our human consciousness a perception of, oh, my God, that's all there is. We have to take care of it. And that started getting people involved with the environment and their own health and the communities to bring this about. That's not the corporate environment, unfortunately. That's the corporate stuff is still reptilian. But the mammalian people are nurturers that want to take care of our planet. And we're in a struggle right now between the reptiles, the corporate end that just wants to use the planet and get what it can, and the new thinkers that are saying, if we don't take care of it, we won't be here. And I think we're in this evolution that looks real scary at this moment is the evolution in the fractal imagery of leaving behind an older reptilian way of life, which is survival of the fittest, it's the dinosaur killer machine, and coming into a communal, nature, nurture-oriented, mammalian, peaceful civilization. And the dinosaurs, if we go back in history, never just really turned over the control of the mammals. The dinosaurs essentially had to crash. And I think we're really on the cusp of this crash, but it will bring together a new mammalian view of taking care of ourselves and our future and our kids.
Very good. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for your phone call, too. We've got lots of calls, not a lot of time, so let's go to as many as we can. Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm just curious how, when you were talking earlier about kind of like comparing the magnets and the shards of metal or whatever to form the bodies, and how does, like, karma in your philosophy kind of fit into this? I don't know if that makes any sense.
No. Yes, it does, because as I said, we were receiving information from the outside from a source, that spiritual identity, but it's a two-way street, because the spiritual identity gains information from having lived in the body, so that we're sort of like Mars landers. We send them from Earth, they land on Mars, they're being controlled by a guy at NASA who sends information to move the vehicle around. But through moving the vehicle around and experiencing the terrain of Mars by the feedback that comes from the lander back to NASA, the driver learns how to drive the vehicle. So having a body is not just the end of a line. Having a body is something that resonates with the spirit. So when you come in and you live your life and the energy that the fields that you generate from your life are harmonically resonant to your spiritual field, that's why you're connected, so that your life experiences can change that field. And when we come back in again, which is easy to understand if you recognize if we're those receptors on the surface of the cell, I could take your receptors off your cell and put it on an embryo, and when that embryo grows up, it'll be downloading your signal. The point is, if we come back in again, then we come back in with a slightly different energy than we came in the first time, because it changes through our experiences.
So in a sense, would you say that, in a kind of comparison, that your karma, good or bad, so let's say it's bad, people that have bad karma, that, you know, you can kind of see it in their face, you can kind of see it in a sense, the way they look, and this is kind of maybe changing them in a way?
Oh, it's changing them, but here's the thing, you know, karma lasts as long as you're unaware, but as you become aware, you can change everything. That's what the nature of the game was, more or less. We come into these physical bodies like a video game. There's somebody out there with a screen watching us moving around, and we're the character, and we're moving around, and they're playing us, and they're learning from the game, and they're going back and forth, and so that whatever is really, you know, moving us is learned from these experiences. And when you learn, the moment you learn, you can learn to run the machine and be successful all the time. And the issue is, so how long is karma? And the answer is, until you become aware of who you are and how you're running the machine, then you have the free will to control it.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're up with Dr. Bruce Lipton. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Alan in St. Helens, Oregon.
Hello, Alan.
On KEX. First, just thank you. It's a real joy to listen to Bruce again. And Bruce, you,
yes.
I'm sure you don't remember me, but we met in Eugene about 14, 15 years ago through Linda and Stan.
Oh, my goodness. That was a long time ago, wasn't it? That was a Seth group.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and I guess...
Seth had this understanding that it was funny, I got pulled into that, because when I started lecturing about the new science, people that understood Seth said, my goodness, this is what that came down in the Seth literature. And in fact, Seth did talk about that the brain of the cell was the membrane, and that we respond to these environments through that. It was just a little aside. I'm sorry I interrupted. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, when you started talking about sharing, you know, the information that that has progressed, it just like, you know, light bulbs went off. It was a lot of fun, and it's really fun listening to you. You have, as a scientist and a, you know, a grown up, you've got a sense of joy about you that I haven't experienced, particularly with listening to other scientists outside of people like Amit Goswami. And I'm wondering if that is something that you've always felt. It's almost like
No. Yeah, Alan, I'll tell you, that was it. When that transformative moment came, I mean, you know, the first thing it did was, for me as a scientist, when I looked at the results of that the membrane was controlled from the environment, to me it was like 2 + 2 = 4. I realized the first thing, I said, oh, my God, I'm immortal because... I'm not in it. And so that if it goes down, I'm still out there. So you know what that did was, the first thing that did was to own that, not as a devotional belief, like, is there this other thing? It's sort of like, yeah, it is. That's just the way it is. Fear seemed to disappear a lot. But, you know, the greatest fear you have is losing your life. And at some point, if you could really own that your life goes on and on and on, it's just like a film strip with frames, one after the other, there's a certain amount of freedom of like, oh, my God, everybody is oppressed in the fear of their mortal existence ending, and as I was before. Having gone on this other side, letting go of the fear also gave me the option of letting go of the patterns that really control us as we've acquired them through education. It gave me a freedom to step outside the box, and the joy is I realized that my life, that if it wasn't working right, it was my responsibility, and by owning that and rewriting those beliefs that were limiting me, I'm walking. I mean, honestly, if there's a heaven, I so honestly and truly feel that it's here, and this is a new feeling only from owning the consciousness of we are not automatons controlled by genes.
Okay, let's go to another caller. Maybe maybe our last wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Bruce, my name is Eva Herr, and I had the same thing happen as you. You're kind of freaking me out. I feel like that I'm on the radio talking. I do high-profile divorce work for a living, and I went to bed one night doing that and woke up the next morning just like you.
Yeah.
So now I detect single-cell vibrational frequencies, and I'm of the opinion that when electrons oscillate, it transmits and receives at the same time, so that's what brings in negative energy, which changes the vibration in a particular organ where those emotions store, and I want to know what you think about that. And I want to know what you think about my opinion about the God force being hydrogen energy.
And you have about a minute for us, Bruce. Go ahead.
Oh, I don't know where to start, except the fact is this, that what we allow in, and this is what is an important point, what we allow in is what we have been programmed to allow in. Negative energy, that old saying of surround yourself with white light, is actually a real understanding as much as walking across hot coals when your mind is right will work, and when your mind is not right, you'll be receptive to the heat and it'll burn yourself. You can walk through this world almost unscathed by keeping your thoughts in harmony and in balance, and as the earlier call, I think Mike said, it was about our community, you can walk on this planet in such a peaceful, harmonic way that life gives you things. It just comes out of the sky.
All right, Bruce, I want to thank you very quickly. Tell us about the book and the offer again.
Yeah, well, the book is The Biology of Belief, and it's, as I said, it's easy to read and even fun. You'll even laugh, and that's different for science. In addition to that, there's an offer on the website, and I think if you write offer@brucelipton.com,
you get information to get that special chapter from Healing Our Planet, Healing Ourselves. And I think it would bring a lot of hope when you read it, because you can see we can collectively create what we were destined to provide, a garden on this planet.
Good job tonight, Bruce. Let's have you back again, okay?
I'd appreciate the opportunity, George. Thank you so much.
Take care, my friend. Hey, for Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, and Art Bell, I'm George Norris, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, my friends, be safe.